The Royal Baccarat Scandal by Royce Wrighton, with Michael Jason, Robert Lang, Judy Bowker, Jane Arden, and Aidan Gillett.
It's wonderful to know Mother was so much loved. Goodbye, Mr. Grant.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. The flowers were lovely. Thank you again. Well, they've gone. At last. A wake always seems to me to be a very curious form of entertainment. I had no idea Mother was so popular with all the villagers and tenants. I mean, hundreds were at the church, and I don't know how many came back here.
No one was there at all. No one.
Did you expect anything different?
No. You never took your eyes off me in the church.
Didn't I, Father? I'm sorry. I was wondering what you were thinking. Do you know, Father, that I am 30 years old, have married, have children, and am about to be divorced, and that I cannot recall a single intimate conversation with you in all that time? Do you know, Father, that Mother lived and died throughout that time, and that I never knew her either? I was 20 before I fully understood how very peculiar our lives were. There I was in 1912, the daughter of a baronet living in Scotland with a rich American mother, and we knew nobody. The balls and house parties I should have gone to, I never went to. The friends I should have had, I didn't have. I once went on a weekend with my husband, so naturally I was introduced as Mrs. Gibbs. All the others knew each other, had been brought up together. I didn't know anyone. I was asked what my maiden name was. In all innocence, I said Gordon Cumming, and I might have dropped a bomb. The dinner table was silent, and everyone stared at me as if I had a dreadful sickness. What happened, Father?
I was the victim, as we all were, of a young man's insane desire for revenge. Now that you're, what did you say, 30, and about to be divorced, we'd better have that intimate conversation at last. Do you know anything about my life at all?
A little. Oh, I knew it was absolutely fatal to talk about the past either with you or with Mother.
It was never discussed with anyone.
So I looked you up in Who's Who. I was most impressed, and even more puzzled. You'd had such a splendid career. Scots Guards, Zulu War, Gordon Relief Expedition. It was like reading about a stranger.
As a young man, I discovered that I was in love with danger. That's why I became a soldier.
And why you went big game hunting in India?
Of course. Stalking a tiger on foot is the most dangerous sport in the world. That's why I loved it. I didn't just want to kill. I wanted to risk my own neck, too.
You seem to have done everything, been everywhere.
Naturally. I was in society. You don't know what that means, do you? Nowadays, there's no real society. Then there was. A small, exclusive world, and I was at the heart of it. You see, I was a member of the Prince of Wales sect. It opened all doors for one. There wasn't an important house party to which I wasn't invited. There wasn't a scrap of gossip that I didn't share.
Gossip?
About the second most dangerous sport.
What was that?
Adultery. At all the dinner parties, once the ladies had gone, the favorite topic over the port was who was sleeping with whom. It was a sort of secret society game, chasing other men's wives. We did it because it was fun to outwit their husbands, and because it was dangerous. Discovery meant instant disgrace. The unbreakable rule was never to be found out.
So a scandal was not part of the fun?
Only when it happened to somebody else. Naturally, I never dreamt it might happen to me. The prince was no stranger to scandal. He had broken the golden rule several times. Too many times, as it turned out.
What do you want to understand, my dear? Is that everyone gossips about me. I sometimes think that is what a Prince of Wales is for.
Oh.
What puzzles the politicians, and my mother, and all the radicals, is that despite my wicked ways, I am very popular with the working class. If they bothered to ask me, I could tell them why. I do what they all want to do. They would like to have racehorses, they would like to go to Paris without their wives. They would like to have my success with women. They would like to be rich, have a title, and travel around Europe. And the reason they don't hate me for being able to do it when they can't is because I so obviously enjoy it all. One of the things you must learn, if you are in the public eye, is to be in a good humour. All the time. Once, you know, when I was in Paris, I was booed at the races.
Oh, sir.
Yes, I was. The French police and my ADCs were all in a terrible state. But I went on smiling and waving as if they were cheering me. And by the end of the day, they were. And that taught me a tremendous lesson. Never lose your temper, not in public. What my detractors don't understand is that actually I'm rather clever. They won't find it out until I'm king, and then I shall astonish them. My buttonhole, my dear. Thank you. Remember me to your husband. Such an understanding man.
It was a chance meeting that began it all, in Hyde Park. It's quite 30 years or so since I've been there. I'm told it's all changed. But then, one met one's friends there. People in society. And, oh yes, even the Prince of Wales.
Ah! Gordon, come in.
Your Royal Highness.
Doing anything for the Doncaster races?
Oh, not at the moment, sir.
I'm staying with the Wilsons at Tranby Croft.
The Wilsons?
Shipbuilder fellow. Very well healed.
Oh yes, from Hull, I believe.
Yes, that's the chap. Charming wife and family, pretty daughter. Married that Lysa Green fellow.
Oh, yes.
I'll get them to invite you. They're a man short, they tell me.
Seldom can an invitation have had such disastrous results. The prince was determined to go to Doncaster. His horse was running in the St. Ledger. And the Wilsons' house, Tranby Croft, was near the racecourse. Mrs. Wilson was determined to be in society. So they seized their chance. Had the prince gone to any other house, there would have been no scandal. It is ironic to think that not only did he carefully select this invitation, but that the Wilson's daughter did her level best to get out of it.
Well, I won't go and let that be an end of it.
But it's ridiculous. Why don't you want to go?
I'm terrified.
Of what, for heaven's sake?
Of the prince.
But you've met him several times before.
Only on formal occasions. Now we shall be entertaining him at my mother's house. I won't know what to do or say.
That's nonsense. You were thrilled when your mother told us he'd be there.
I know, but it's nearer the time now. I'm sick with nerves.
Look, it is quite impossible to cancel, and I'm not going to do anything so discourteous to your parents or to His Royal Highness. The Prince will have a list of the guests, and we will be on that list, and only a very strong reason, like a death in the family, could possibly get us out of going now. Apart from anything else, I want to go. And cannot go without you.
Why not?
Surely you can see it would be dreadfully embarrassing. Your mother's planned this house party meticulously. She's talked of nothing else for weeks. And it is very disloyal to me.
Disloyal to you? How?
Half the country would give their right hand to spend the weekend with the Prince of Wales. We need to make the right connections for ourselves and our children's future. And the best way to ensure that is to get into the Prince of Wales' set.
We're in his set.
Don't be absurd. We're on the fringe of it, if that. My father may be an MP, but he is in trade. Your father can be the richest man in the world, for all anyone else cares. He is still in trade.
Trade? My father is the biggest shipowner in the country.
You know perfectly well I can't become a member of certain clubs because of what we are. There was even hostility to my appointment as master of the local hunt. I want to get on. If the prince likes us, we may get an invitation to Sandringham. Everything follows from there.
I don't know what you're talking about. When I came out, we were received everywhere.
Only at the larger parties. Can't you understand that you will be side by side with the Prince of Wales for 3 whole days? You're an attractive woman. They'll probably pay you a good deal of attention. And what's more, you're the only member of the family who can really play baccarat.
Baccarat? What has that got to do with it?
Oh, the prince insists on playing it wherever he goes. He's obsessed by the game. You see, you'll be able to impress him with your play. That'll be a great point in our favour.
How can I play baccarat when my hands are shaking so much I won't be able to hold the cards? Well, please don't make me go. Say anything, make any excuse, but get me out of it.
Why are you lying to me?
What?
Pretending to be ill. There's something else behind this, isn't there?
No. I am ill, I tell you. I may be pregnant.
Nonsense. I don't think I've ever heard anything so selfish, so hysterical in all my life.
If I'm selfish, you are inconsiderate and unkind. I won't go. You can't make me go.
Baccarat. Do you know anything about Baccarat, my dear?
No.
It was the latest craze. Everyone played it. I'm talking about 1890. It swept society, very much as I believe Mahjong has today. The great difference being that Baccarat was technically illegal, because it was a game of chance and not of skill. Be that as it may, very few people paid much attention, least of all the prince, who always travelled with his own Baccarat counters. The excitement of joining the royal train was tremendous. I loved it all. The mounted escorts, the outriders, the police, his huge staff, the luxury of the carriages, the pomp he delighted in like a child in a show, and above all, the knowledge that one was a favored guest. It made one acutely proud. Playing host to him, of course, was another matter, and fraught with peril. Even experienced hostesses would shake with nerves. As long as everything was perfect, he would be content. But the slightest mistake sent him into a tantrum. Mrs. Wilson was far from experienced, and I wondered how she would manage.
Mrs. Wilson, I must have two extra hands in the kitchen, otherwise it is impossible.
Engage them, anything you want. Oh, are you quite sure you've remembered what the prince has for breakfast?
How could I forget? Kidneys, liver, bacon, eggs, sausage, steak, café, champagne, porridge, crème, fruit, kedgeree.
Yes.
Does his royal highness eat it all?
All? Oh, and at 11 o'clock?
Champagne, smoked salmon, caviar.
Yes.
For the luncheon, we have the emperor prepared.
Good.
Choice of wine, ark and margot, cold turkey, good, ham, game pie, salad.
Yes, that'll be splendid. Stanley! Oh, has anyone seen my son?
I'm here, Mama.
Oh, Stanley, have you checked everything?
I think so. The butler and footman have gone on ahead to prepare the tent for lunch.
Oh, if only your father would help.
You know he's tied up with his solicitors about the merger with the Cunard line.
Why has he got to see them now?
It's all right, Mother. I can manage.
Oh.
I've drawn up a schedule.
Oh, good.
Royal train arrives at 11:20.
Yes.
You and the Lord Lieutenant on the platform. Police escort lined up with the local Yorkshire volunteers behind. The school children in the station yard with the Union Jack.
Oh, a nice touch. Now, get to the dinner, dear, the dinner. Oh, did we settle the Plathmore? That's vital.
All settled.
Oh, Gaston, please run over the menu again. I'm sure I've missed something else.
What else is there left? Plover's eggs, beef consommé for clear, and potage à la reine. Tepot hollandaise, artichoke with melted butter, roast beef à l'anglaise.
Did he really eat all that?
Oh, yes. The prince couldn't last an hour without a four-course meal.
It's a wonder it didn't kill him.
Well, it did, of course. It was technically bronchial pneumonia, but I always thought it was overindulgence. We spent most of the first day at the races. They cheered the prince when he arrived, cheered him when his horse won, and cheered him when he left. The drive back to Tranby Croft was almost like a state procession. Mrs. Wilson was beside herself with excitement. I dressed for dinner without a care in the world, proudly displaying all my decorations. The meal was excellent. The Wilsons had gone to immense trouble and expense. After port and cigars, we joined the ladies.
That was delightful, Mrs. Wilson. I almost think I've eaten too much.
Oh, sir.
My wife was also saying what a splendid dinner it was, Mrs. Wilson.
Absolutely delicious. I've never had so many courses.
No one could entertain at all unless they can do it properly. Mrs. Wilson, I shall call again. You arranged my little visit.
You are most kind, sir. Did you hear that, Stanley? His Royal Highness is pleased.
So he should be. Thank God his horse won this afternoon.
Just so long as he doesn't want to play cards. You know how Papa disapproves of Baccarat. Mm.
Baccarat? Did I hear you suggest the game, Mrs. Wilson? What an excellent idea. Why don't you lead the way to the card room?
Card room? Oh, dear. You see, sir, my husband and I so seldom play that I'm afraid we haven't got one.
No card room?
No. Oh, dear.
Where do your guests play, then?
Well, you see, sir, I'm sure we can play somewhere.
What about this room, sir?
Yes. This will do very well. Where's the card table?
Card table? Yes, well, you see, sir, but...
There are some spare tables over there. We could put them together.
Good. General Williams will show you how I like things done. Where are my counters?
Here, sir.
Levitt, why don't you help with the tables?
Sir.
Who is Levitt?
A subaltern in my regiment. Wet behind the ears and a bit of a dandy, but perfectly harmless.
Now, who is going to play? Mrs. Williams?
Oh, well, yes, of course, sir. I don't know much about the game, but if somebody will tell me what to do...
It's perfectly easy. Let me explain.
Stanley, what are we going to do?
We'll have to play.
But it's illegal.
It must be all right. The prince is playing.
Oh, I suppose so.
Where does this table go?
With that one. We'll put them end to end like we do at my sister's.
Yes.
You play, do you, Mrs. Green?
A little, General.
Sir William taught her.
Then she'll be an expert.
Where is Sir William, by the way?
I have no idea.
Where were you?
In the conservatory.
Why isn't Lysis Green here?
Oh, he's gone to bed, sir.
Is he ill?
If you remember, he asked to be excused after dinner. He was exhausted after a day's hunting. He went out early this morning with the hounds.
Of course. Of course. Yes. That won't be long enough, you know.
Well, there's another table in the study, sir. Help me, will you, Levitt?
Good heavens. We shan't start until midnight at this rate.
Oh, dear. He's drumming his fingers. Lady Brooke told me that was a dangerous sign.
Mrs. Green, perhaps the prince would like a little night air.
Would you care for a turn in the garden, sir, while they finish setting up the table? It's such a lovely evening.
Very well, very well. Hurry, you two. Put that on the end here. Now, we shall need a cloth and 9 chairs.
Mrs. Wilson, you must help me. The prince wants me to play, but I don't know a thing about it. What am I going to do?
Well, it's no use asking me.
It's quite simple, dear. I will tell you as we go along.
I'm bound to do everything wrong.
I'll get the cloth.
Do you know how to play, Mrs. Wilson?
Well, a little.
I know I shall get muddled and trump the prince's what you call it.
That's bridge, dear. It's baccarat. Tonight.
It's what?
I've told you innumerable times. It's perfectly simple. Now, don't fuss. I will look after you.
Will this do, sir?
It's a little highly coloured. It'll have to. Spread it out evenly as possible. No creases. Now then.
What are those red things?
Counters.
What are they for?
We use them instead of money. The red represents £5, the brown £10, and so on.
Are we all ready?
Just about, sir.
Well, shall we get started, then? Mrs. Green will be joining us in a moment. She felt the cold and went to fetch a wrap. Are you playing, Wilson?
Yes, sir.
I shall be bank.
I'm not quite sure what I have to do.
It's very simple. I am the banker. I deal 2 cards to the player on my right and 2 cards to the player on my left.
Yes,
and, of course, I take 2 cards myself. The object, you understand, dear lady, is to make up the number 9.
The number 9.
Or as near as possible. 8 is almost as good. The player with the nearest to 9 wins.
Please, you are not to follow me.
Why not?
It's too dangerous.
That's half the fun.
My husband may see us.
I don't care.
Well, I do. He must be mad. It was dangerous enough at Blenheim. It's sheer lunacy here.
Blenheim was marvelous.
It was terrifying. Suppose someone had seen us.
That's what was so exciting, don't you think?
No, I don't. Shh, be quiet. Someone will hear.
Nonsense. They're all too busy at cards.
No, you're not too. Someone will come in.
What happens if I get a 10 or one of those kings and things?
Court cards don't count.
Don't count?
No.
Oh, my dear.
You see, there are more than 9, so they don't count.
Not at all?
No, not at all. Kings and things, my dear lady, are useless.
Why are you so reckless? It frightens me to death.
There's no fun in anything if there's no danger.
If we're caught, I am the one who will be ruined, not you.
We won't be caught.
You've no idea how jealous my husband can be. If he saw us alone for a moment, he'd make a dreadful scene.
He won't dare with a prince here.
William, you must wait. We can meet in London.
We can indeed. But now we're meeting here. Your husband went to bed early, didn't he? We have the perfect opportunity.
I can't. We still share the same bedroom. I can't get out of it, even though the nights with him are sheer misery. Oh, especially now. After we... Oh, God, what am I going to do? If I come to bed late, there'll be another scene. What excuse can I give?
You will tell your husband the prince insisted on your staying until the end of the game of baccarat.
Yes.
When the game is over, you will meet me out here again. I'll make sure the coast is clear. And we will go to my room.
He must be mad. Oh, you'll hear everyone else going to bed. How am I going to explain?
Ah, Mr. Green, your wife was just showing me the conservatory.
Really?
Most impressive. Good night.
What are you doing here?
I took the prince out for some fresh air. I was with him until a moment ago. Well, he went back in, but I felt faint, so I stayed out
here. You never feel faint. I think you stayed out here to meet Gordon Cumming.
How can you say that? I did nothing of the kind. Oh, it's too awful.
What is?
I'm so ashamed.
What about?
A dreadful man. He pursued me here. He followed me here.
What happened? Tell me. Tell me what happened.
He kept saying the most dreadful things to me. He took hold of me. He tried to kiss me.
No wonder you are so distressed.
I thought you'd be so angry.
Has it ever happened before?
Yes. No. Once at Blenheim, he pursued me along a corridor. When I refused to talk to him, he said, "You silly little fool, all the young wives go to bed with me in the end."
He said that?
Oh, that's why I didn't want to come this weekend.
I see.
Take me home. I can't bear to stay here a moment longer.
Other men have been attracted by you before. It happens quite often, and you manage them brilliantly. Why are you so very upset this time?
It's almost as if he wants to be found out.
What do you mean?
Oh, you know his reputation as well as I do. He pursues women quite openly, regardless of the consequences. I'm afraid he'll make his feelings for me obvious in some dreadful
Listen
way.
Listen to me and stop crying. We are not going.
But
we will behave as if nothing has happened. This weekend is too important to me. I am not going to have it ruined by some disgusting old lecher.
I can't face him again.
You must, for both our sakes. Now, dry your eyes, pull yourself together, and go back to the game.
How can I play cards with him?
The prince will be impatient. You know he doesn't like to be kept waiting.
Very well.
Ah, Mrs. Green, are you joining us at last?
I'm sorry, sir.
I hope you, at least, know how to play.
I've had a few lessons.
Well, I suppose there's something to be thankful for.
Mm.
Now, are we ever going to start? And where is Gordon Cumming hiding himself?
Here I am, sir.
Thank God. At least there are two of us who know something about the game.
Well then, sir, we'll have the advantage, won't we?
I'm sure, sir. We'll all put it out as fast as we can, but I'm still not quite sure what happens if I get a call.
They don't count, Mrs. Williams.
I've told her that several times.
I've spent my life telling her that. You must get the number 9. If you get, say, 2 or 3, you can ask for another card.
To try and make 9, you see?
Yes. See that?
Yes, I see.
What is the bank worth, sir?
Oh, let's say 100, shall we?
What does that mean?
Darling, it means the bank's liability is limited to £100.
Oh, is it?
The yes. Bank deals?
Have you any writing paper, Wilson? Could I have a sheet, please? Preferably white.
Of course.
Is that part of the game?
It's darling, difficult to see the stakes on this clock.
Stakes?
The bets, the counters, dear.
Is there something wrong with the clock?
It's a mixture of colours that confuse the eye.
Well, I could get counters. Another if you like.
No, no, or we'll never start.
Here you are, sir. I shall place my counters on this paper so that my bets are clear.
Very well, then. I shall deal.
My father explained to me that there were only 2 real experts of the game that night. The prince, who was preoccupied with the bank, and my father, who played with his usual dash and swagger. Most bets were small, and there was great excitement when someone won a game.
I too, my dear.
A coup was the term for a game. The counters were used for money, and my father scrupulously placed his bets on the paper he'd asked for. His stakes were rather higher than the others. There was a great deal of chatter and laughter. The gentlemen were smoking cigars and drinking brandy and port. Those not actually playing were watching and betting and moving about. And then it happened.
My God. What's that? This is too hot. What is? Gordon Cumming is cheating. Impossible.
Save yourself, Levitt.
Nine here.
There it is. Damn you, sir. You're having all the luck.
I wish I understood why he's won.
My dear lady, don't you see Sir William has nine?
Nine what?
The value of his cards comes to nine, madam, nine. Oh. The bank has to pay him the equivalent of his stake. £10, I think, Sir William.
Five more to come, sir.
There. Did you see that?
Yes. Yes, I did. Well, I think I did.
You think you did?
Well, I can't be sure.
What are we to do?
Well, don't look at me. I mean, he's a friend of mine. He's in my regiment. It's unthinkable. Gordon Cumming cheating.
What's that?
Lysa Green.
What did you say?
Nothing.
I heard you say something about Gordon Cumming.
No, it was imagination. I was mistaken.
Oh, don't be a fool. We both saw it. Not once, but several times.
Saw what?
He's juggling his counters to win more than he should.
Oh, we don't know that.
We do know that. We saw it. It's flagrant appalling dishonesty on the part of the prince and my mother. I'm going to challenge him here and now.
No, no, not yet.
But he's robbing my mother's guests.
You can't challenge him until you're certain.
I am certain.
Levitt is not.
Well, he was a moment ago.
I need time to think.
Precisely. There lies the danger of your position.
Levitt, you know what you saw.
Be quiet, Stanley. Just think for a moment. If you rush up and denounce him now, what will happen? There will be a scene. Sir William will protest his innocence, and Levitt won't dare to support you. It'll be your word against Sir William, a boy of 22 against a great soldier. They'll make mincemeat of you. But if all three of us watch him, and all three of us see him, then we will be certain, and then we can accuse him.
I can't do that. I tell you, he's in my regiment.
Well,
it will destroy him, crucify him.
You're quite right. It will.
Listen to him. The unspeakable bounder.
Control yourself, Stanley. If you don't, we will be lost. This is a moment for coolness and courage. Levitt, you realize it is your duty.
All right.
Then let us go back to the table.
Well, that's enough for tonight. I don't know about anyone else, but I'm all in. And somewhat the poorer. You had an amazing run of luck, Gordon Cumming. How do you do it?
I keep my head, sir.
Yes, hang on to that at all costs. You always were a lucky bounder. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good
night.
Ah, Green. I thought you'd gone to bed.
I was delayed, sir.
Oh, let me show you to your room, sir.
Thank you, dear lady. So kind. Delightful house. Delightful evening. Charming daughter. You're a lucky fellow, Green.
Thank you, sir.
There's champagne and cold chicken on a tray in your room,
splendid,
sir.
Splendid, splendid. Lead on. Gordon Cumming, we'll see if your luck holds out tomorrow.
What a splendid evening.
What are we to do?
Watch tomorrow night. And your mother, Stanley, must be told.
Mm. Why involve Mrs. Wilson?
She must know what is going on in her own house.
But surely if anyone is to be told, it should be my father.
I think not. He's far too preoccupied with this merger. It's a matter of over £2 million.
As much as that?
He plans to settle £500,000 on you and Ethel. We don't want to endanger any of that, do we?
No, we do not.
Far better to keep him out of it for the moment. Tomorrow evening we can all watch him. You, Levitt, me, my wife, and Mrs. Wilson.
Oh, what a relief. Oh, that went on wonderfully in the end, didn't it? I think the prince really enjoyed himself. Oh, I must admit, I nearly died when he asked for the card room, Stanley. Why are you all looking so solemn?
We have something very serious to tell you, Mrs. Wilson.
Well, is something wrong?
Levitt and Stanley saw Gordon Cumming cheating at cards tonight.
What? What did you say?
I know it's awful, Mother, but he was definitely cheating.
Oh, but that's impossible. He's a gentleman.
I'm afraid it is true.
My goodness. Oh, what are we to do? Who do you say saw him?
Mr. Levitt and Stanley.
But what do they know about it? They're boys. Boys. Oh, they must be mistaken. Sir William is a guards officer, a baronet, a friend of the prince. Oh, he couldn't possibly cheat.
Mrs. Wilson, one of them is your own son. I'm sure you don't think he'd make such an accusation lightly.
Do you realize what you're saying, Stanley?
I'm afraid I do, Mother.
But this is terrible. If this gets out, the scandal will be appalling. Oh, I just can't believe such a thing could happen after a day like this. It's been a triumph. Driving to the races beside him with a crowd cheering us, I felt like the Princess of Wales. And now if this gets out, we'll all be ruined.
Please don't distress yourself, Mrs. Wilson. I'm not at all certain that I saw anything.
Oh, I will not have any unpleasantness in my house. Especially not now, with the Prince of Wales upstairs at this very moment in bed. Oh, your father would be so angry with me. And as for the disgrace, oh, it'll be catastrophic.
Now, Mother, keep calm.
Well, this must be hushed up. You're not to say a word to anyone. I'm your mother and I forbid it. Oh, it's quite simple. I will prevent anyone playing cards tomorrow. I'll tell them your father disapproves.
But forgive me, Mrs. Wilson, that is outrageous.
Outrageous?
This man, Gordon Cumming, goes out into society. He plays cards with innocent, unsuspecting people. And if he is habitually cheating, then that means that he is habitually robbing them.
Oh, dear. Yes, I do see. Oh, how shocking. I don't know what to do.
Well, I do. At all costs, you must allow the game tomorrow. That is essential.
And what good will that do?
We will all be able to watch him. And then if we are all of us agreed that we have seen him cheating, we will take action. Stanley, we shall need a different cloth, plain coloured this time. Uh-huh. Levitt, you could fetch a piece of chalk. There's some in the billiard room.
Yes.
Couldn't we simply ask him to leave?
You can't do that without telling him why. And if you tell him why without any proof, he could sue you for slander.
Oh, no.
And if he leaves without any explanation, there'll be every sort of rumour going about the country in days. Mrs. Wilson, this is not the sort of thing I enjoy discussing with ladies. And I don't know whether you realize this or not, but Sir William's reputation is not beyond reproach.
What?
I understand that he has a particular penchant for young wives.
Oh, my goodness. Do you mean people will think he has made advances to Ethel?
That's exactly what everyone will think. And neither of us wants to have that sort of gossip going the rounds, do we?
Oh, dear me, no.
Then it is agreed. We will watch. We will be certain of our facts, and then we will expose him.
I suppose it's the only way.
What do you want to do with the chalk?
I'll show you. I'm not an expert, but I have played a few times. Baccarat tables usually have a line drawn round them like this, about 6 inches from the edge. This will make it easier for us to see if he cheats. The counter this side of the line near the edge of the table is not a stake, but a counter the other side, nearer the centre, is. Now, an honest player moves his stake thus, over the line, so that everyone can clearly see how much he bets. The thing to watch for is how Sir William moves his counters. Tomorrow evening, we must all be round the table early.
We mustn't tell anyone else.
Except Ethel.
Why, Ethel? Must we involve my daughter?
She will be playing, so she must be on the lookout, too. The more witnesses we have, the better. Remember, above all, that tomorrow night at the game, we have to behave as normally as possible.
Oh.
No one must suspect a thing.
So the trap was laid for my father.
It had been a perfect day. A great crowd at the St. Ledger, sparkling sunshine. I gambled heavily and brought off a splendid triple. The prince's horse won again, and I'd never seen him in a better mood. At dinner, he joked, laughed, teased the ladies, and swore he'd win at cards, too, that night. The baccarat table was waiting. They changed the cloth, and I wondered why. People began to wander in. Ethel did not meet my eyes, but I thought I understood. Lycett Green stared at me with an unflinching, steely gaze. I took no hint from it of the impending danger, only wondered with a momentary thrill whether he suspected anything. It adds to the excitement when the husband suspects.
Now, has everyone got their wits about them? Ah, this is a better cloth. One can see far more clearly. Sit down, sit down.
Please.
I'll be banker again, shall I? Seems to be this last night. £100.
Listen to me.
Yes?
We can't do this.
Why not?
It's too dangerous.
For whom?
For us all.
No, not for us all. For Sir William.
I can't go through with it.
You have no choice unless you want a far greater scandal.
What do you mean?
Mrs. Green, are you playing?
Of course, sir. She's looking forward to it. Aren't you, my dear?
It was a monstrous plot.
Quiet.
No one warned you? Not even Mrs. Green?
She didn't dare. Her husband never left her side. If I was trapped, so was she.
But
Only one of the so-called witnesses was remotely impartial.
Yes, I think little Stanley Wilson genuinely believed I cheated.
The others were just doing what Mr. Lysett Green told them to do.
So Ethel told me, eventually.
She told you?
I remember how keenly I was looking forward to the game. Yet it was to destroy my peace of mind forever.
My father's hands moved. Five pairs of eyes watched. The counters clicked. A chair shifted now and then. A glass clinked, and the cards fell silently onto the soft cloth.
Oh, isn't this exciting?
Great fun. I told you it would be when you got the hang of it.
The coup was completed. The winning card shown. The banker paid the bets. Then, to the conspirators' fascinated horror, my father seemed to walk into the trap.
There's another tenner, sir. Come here.
What? Well, I wish you'd put your counter so that it could be seen better, Gordon Cumming. Give him another tenner, General.
I saw it.
How terrible. I can't be mistaken.
Just as Lysett Green said.
He did it.
Yes, he did.
Another excellent game. I do enjoy playing with you, Gordon Cumming. How long have we known each other?
Over 20 years, sir.
Well, let me tell you. You are one of my most valued friends. Come and join me for a stroll, eh? We can talk over old times.
That would be delightful, sir.
Off duty now, the rest of you. Well played, the novices. You even began to look as if you were enjoying yourselves. The whole evening has been charming. I look forward to many other visits. Come on, then, old warrior.
Good night, sir.
Good night, sir.
Good night,
sir.
Good night,
sir.
Good night, sir. Good night, Mrs. Williams.
Good night, Mrs.
Wilson. Well, there's no doubt, is there?
None at all.
I can't believe it.
We must inform General Williams. He is the Prince's ADC and the senior officer present.
Yes, that seems right. Who'll tell him?
I will.
No, no. I think we should stop this here and now.
I agree with Mrs. Wilson. I don't want any part of it.
You will have to. You're a witness.
What do you mean, witness?
We have witnessed a crime, and we must testify to that.
Oh, my God.
Now, Levitt, I want you and Stanley to join the Prince and Sir William.
Uh-huh. Join them? Why?
To make sure they don't come back in here.
How can we stop?
Oh, for God's sake, man, talk. Say anything that comes into your head. Stanley will help you.
Come on, Levitt.
Go on, just keep them spellbound with your wit.
All right.
In the meantime, Mrs. Wilson, will you draw the General aside and tell him that I wish to see him urgently? Now, don't worry, we won't do anything at all without his advice.
Well, if you say so. Oh, I do hope you know what you're doing.
Ethel, I think you should go to our room.
I think you should be very careful. A scandal once started is difficult to stop. It could hurt us all.
The man is a cheat. He is also a professional seducer of innocent young women, yourself included.
What?
You must think me a complete fool. I know exactly what's been going on for the past year. Oh, don't look so frightened, my dear. Nothing can come out. He cannot say he seduced you without destroying his own reputation as well as yours. So you see, whatever you did at Blenheim, or indeed elsewhere, both you and he will have to be silent. I do hope you understand me.
Mrs. Wilson said you wish to see me urgently.
Yes, sir, I do. If you will excuse us, my dear.
Of course.
I have something most serious and unpleasant to tell you, sir. This evening, five people are convinced they saw Sir William Gordon Cumming cheat at cards.
Good God,
cried.
Who are they?
Mrs. Wilson and her son Stanley, Levitt, my wife, and myself.
All five of you saw him?
Yes, and all five of us cannot be wrong.
No, no, indeed not. I'm absolutely stunned. You say Levitt saw it too?
Indeed.
He is a brother officer. I mean, he would never accuse him unless he was certain.
Never.
I don't know what to say. For God's sake, pour me a brandy.
You must agree, sir. The man is a bounder, a thief.
Yes, yes, yes. But we must keep calm. We must think what to do.
I am perfectly calm, sir, and I know exactly what to do. It is my intention to insult Gordon Cumming publicly tomorrow.
You will do what?
I shall insult him at the racecourse with the whole county watching.
Now listen to me, young man. You will in no circumstances do anything of the kind. Don't you realize who is staying in this house? Whatever ghastly mess results from this, at all costs, he must be kept out of it.
But why should he be involved? I'm not accusing His Royal Highness of anything. I am, in fact, protecting him from a thief.
Are you a complete fool? The Prince has been involved in an illegal game. Not only permitting it, but actually playing it. And gambling, too.
you realize that a great mass of the people regard that as a sin? Worst of all, because of the behavior, not of a passing acquaintance, but a close friend of his, the whole thing now reeks of foul play and dishonor. What do you think the press will make of that? And the country? Good God, the Queen! She might even seek to alter the succession.
Surely you're exaggerating, General.
Don't you understand? The Queen is over 70. She's very nearly blind. The Prince may succeed to the throne within months, perhaps even weeks. What do you think would happen if at that very moment he was deep in a scandal?
We cannot allow Gordon Cumming to get away with it. At the very least, His Royal Highness must be told.
What must I be told?
You are not to say anything, Green.
The General is upset, sir.
Be quiet.
Because you see, sir, Gordon Cumming has been seen cheating at cards.
The Prince was as shocked as the General had been. More so. First of all, he knew that whilst everybody else in the land could get away with playing an illegal card game, he, as the heir to the throne, could not. Secondly, he knew that both the Puritans and the Radicals bitterly disapproved of him and would savage him if they had half a chance, and here was a golden opportunity for them to do just that. Concerned for his own predicament, he barely thought about my father at all.
If this gets out, sir, it will do you untold harm.
Do you think I don't know that?
And your report to the government on Germany.
Naturally. They'll throw it in the dustbin. Who saw him cheating?
No less than 5 people, sir.
5? Can it be certain? Gordon Cumming is an officer and a gentleman.
We are as certain as we can be, sir.
You must appreciate my position, Queen. Neither the Queen nor the government understands about Germany. Sadly, only I do. I've just come back from there, and I saw it all for myself. A massive and terrifying rearmament. We need allies. We need France. I have to convince the powers that be. It is difficult enough as it is. But with this, it will be impossible.
Lycett Green was not slow to give the Prince every detail. But he was speaking without authority from the other witnesses and grossly exaggerated their stories. They were nowhere near as united and convinced as he made them out to be. The Prince not only believed him implicitly, he compounded this folly by acting hastily and stupidly. He failed to get expert professional advice and relied solely upon General Williams. But the General was neither legally qualified nor a diplomat. He was just a soldier. He simply saw that his first and only duty was to protect the Prince from scandal.
We could ask him to sign a paper undertaking not to play cards again.
But wouldn't that amount to a confession?
Not necessarily. It would have to be carefully worded, of course.
But why should he sign anything?
He might, if we undertook to keep silent in return.
But that would be letting him off scot-free.
It is our one hope.
I cannot possibly agree. If that is how you see it, I shall have to take matters into my own hands. Tomorrow at the races, I shall walk straight up to him and strike him across the face.
You will do no such thing. I absolutely forbid it.
Sir?
He must be stopped. I understand that. I understand your indignation. But we must do nothing hasty. Does he know about your suspicions?
No, sir.
Then he must be told immediately. Williams, go at once and inform him. He cannot be condemned unheard.
Sir. But, sir...
He must be allowed to defend himself.
May I speak to you, please?
Well, I was just going to bed, but if it's important...
Something very disagreeable has happened. Some of the people here object to the way you play baccarat.
What do you mean?
I mean they accuse you of cheating.
Of cheating?
That is correct.
This is a foul and abominable falsehood. How dare anyone say such a thing against me? I demand an explanation at once.
This is what they demand, too.
I insist here and now on a complete withdrawal of the accusation and an instant apology.
You won't get one.
What?
And I don't think they'll withdraw.
Do you understand what you are saying?
Perfectly.
They must be stark staring mad. I demand to know who are my accusers.
Your hostess and her son, Stanley. Mr. Levitt. Also the Lycett Greens.
Both of them?
Oh, yes. Both of them.
2 women and 3 boys, totally without experience of life. Surely you're not going to believe the statements of these children against me.
1 or 2 I could discount. But there are 5, sir. 5?
Listen to me. I am a man of the world. I have ample means... I am a rich man, and I will shortly be married to an American millionaireess. What possible reason would I have to risk my entire reputation for a few pounds? I am an officer in what is the most respected regiment in the country. I belong to the best clubs. I have shot, hunted, played cards with every well-known gentleman in the British Isles, starting with His Royal Highness. And never once has there been the slightest imputation on my honor. It is inconceivable that such a charge should be brought against me, and that you, my old friend of 30 years' standing, should listen to it.
I had to.
Why?
There are 5 of them. Are you suggesting that they are lying?
They are mistaken.
Are they all blind, sir? Are they all in a plot against you, sir? And if so, why? Are they all 5 of them motivated by malice? And if so, for what reason? Take Mrs. Wilson. Why on earth should she lie about you?
I don't know.
Why should her son, or Levitt? He is in your own regiment. Surely he is a man of honor.
Of course.
Or the Lycett Greens? Have they any reason to hate you?
None whatever.
Is there any reason at all for any one of them to conspire to bring you into contempt?
There can be no such reason at all.
Well then,
if they are innocent of malice because they have no motive, I am innocent of cheating because I too have no motive.
William, you like to win.
Well, of course I do, but not that way. You know I'd never stoop to that.
If one person had made the accusation alone, or 2 even, I'd never have believed them. But 5 people say they saw you. 5.
If there were 5 million, they'd still be mistaken.
Like everyone else in the case, the general was mesmerized by the sheer number of accusers. It seemed to drive every other consideration out of everyone's heads. No one seemed to consider examining each of the 5 separately and thus assessing the value of their separate allegations.
There is, however, one point on which we can agree. This must not get out. Not just for your sake, but for His Royal Highness's sake, too. The Prince and I can help you.
The Prince? He knows about this already.
I'm afraid so.
How could you possibly tell him before hearing my side?
Lycett Green blurted it out before I could stop him.
I see. Then I should like to see the Prince at once, if I may.
I'll see if I can arrange it.
You must. I need your help, Owen. I will place myself entirely in your hands.
That was most unwise of my father. The General had no interest whatsoever in his welfare. The General's sole concern was to protect the Prince. In fact, my father made almost every conceivable mistake a man in his position could make. My father would come to regret each of his mistakes bitterly in time, but the most foolish of all was to tell a deliberate lie.
Have the Lycett Greens any reason to hate you?
None whatever.
My father little realized that with those words he had cut off a future lifeline. But General Williams had gone to the core of the case. My father was a notorious lecturer. Young wives were fair game to him, and he pursued them remorselessly. As a result, all the young husbands hated him. So he had a time bomb ticking away under him all his life. Sooner or later, one of the young husbands was going to fight back, and Mr. Lycett Green did.
I have asked you all to come and see me again, because the General and I believe we have found a solution to this unfortunate business. I put it to you that if Gordon Cumming will sign a solemn undertaking never to play cards again, we in turn will agree never to say a word about this to anyone. What do you say?
Well, yes, I could agree to that.
I certainly could.
And I. All right, but only to save any further trouble.
Well, Green?
I am truly sorry, and with great respect to you, sir, but I simply cannot tolerate this. This man is a card sharper and a cad. Are you seriously suggesting that we let him go out into society to swindle, to pick the pockets of his friends, to...
In a discussion of this nature, emotion should be kept to a minimum.
I am not in the least emotional about it. How could you possibly suggest such a thing, sir? I have no axe to grind personally. I barely know the man. But all my life I have had a horror of dishonesty. It's obscene that he...
You really must think beyond your immediate sense of outrage. Should this become a court case, his legal advisers will quite properly attack us all. The proposed paper, in binding us to silence, also silences him. It protects us from any suit for slander. What is more, it protects us from the radical press, who will jump at the opportunity to turn this perfectly innocent gathering into a den of illegal gambling and debauchery. All of us will face catastrophe, and that, sir, includes the ladies. Do you understand?
He's right, Green. You know he is.
We simply must keep the wretched business quiet.
I think that is clear, Lycett Green.
For all our sakes, please.
Very well. I agree.
Excellent. We can now draft. the document. Mr. Lighted Green seems to be your spokesman. Are you happy for him to act for you?
Yes,
yes. Well, very well. Perhaps the rest of you would leave us for the moment.
Sir. It must be strongly worded, sir.
Naturally. Write this down, General. In consideration of a promise made by the ladies and gentlemen...
Don't you think the ladies should be kept out of it, sir?
Of course. You are quite right. In consideration of the promise made by the gentlemen whose names are subscribed to preserve silence with reference to an accusation which has been made in regard to my conduct at Baccarat on the night of... give the date, year, and place.
Don't you think it should be disgraceful conduct?
We mustn't drive him too far, or he won't sign.
September 1890 at Tranby Croft.
I will, on my part, solemnly undertake never to play cards again. Signed, Gordon Cup.
Never to play cards again as long as I live. I think the words as long as I live should be added.
Yes. Add that, Williams. Are you content?
I am, sir.
Very well. I will now see Sir William. Fetch him in, will you, General? And perhaps you'd better wait outside with the others, Green.
Sir.
Yes.
Sir William Gordon coming.
Come in, Sir William.
Your Royal Highness.
This is a sad business.
It is an outrage, sir. I deny the charge absolutely.
You deny it?
Certainly I do. I presume, sir, you do not attach any substance to it yourself.
But how can you deny it? There are five of them. They agree absolutely as to what they saw.
Sir, you know me.
Very well.
For many years we have been, I venture to suggest, close personal friends.
Absolutely.
Have you, in all that time, ever known me do anything dishonorable?
Never.
Then may I ask why you give credit to these wild allegations?
What am I to do? Five honorable people accuse you. Well, perhaps you have not been caught before.
I cannot believe you could have made that remark, sir. Only 3 hours ago you referred warmly to our friendship. I am an officer and a gentleman. I have fought in more than one war for my queen and country. I have been awarded the highest decoration.
Yes, yes. Gordon Cumming, no one is disputing your courage. It is your integrity that is in question.
I thought the two went together, sir. Or will the next thing in question be my loyalty to my country?
It is very shocking. But it is your word against theirs. That is the crux of the matter.
Then I must sue them for slander.
No, no, Sir William, really. Do you think there is a court in the world that would believe in a conspiracy of lies against you?
Not a conspiracy, sir. A mistake.
But that is even more ridiculous. Did all five make the same mistake? It is quite untenable.
Then what am I to do?
General Williams here has had an excellent idea. If you do as we suggest, we can ensure that not a word of it will get out.
How?
You simply have to sign a paper that we have drafted.
Oh?
And before you read it, I must emphasize that I already have a solemn undertaking from your accusers to maintain absolute silence about this matter, providing you are willing to sign.
I see.
I'm sure you appreciate the immense advantage of that.
May I read it?
Of course. I suggest that we have Green return to witness the signing, General.
Certainly, sir. I cannot sign this.
Why not?
It is an admission of guilt.
Yes, it is. It's the only way to avoid a horrible scandal.
How can there be a scandal when I did nothing wrong?
This paper has been drafted for your benefit, Gordon Cumming. It is your only hope of avoiding public disgrace. Now, please, think carefully before you refuse.
There is no need to think. I utterly reject it.
Look, why don't you just admit it and have done with it?
Will you be silent, sir?
This is between us, isn't it, sir? You want to bring me down.
Yes, I do.
Why? I challenge you to tell me why.
Because you are a thief.
You young blackguard.
Stop this. This is no
I'm not afraid of him.
You will hold your tongue, sir, or you will leave the room.
I appeal to you for your help, sir.
I am trying to help you. That is the purpose of the document, don't you see that?
I mean in defending my honor.
Unless you sign, your accusers will publish the story tomorrow morning. You will be drummed out of your regiment. I am trying to save you from that.
You are lost if you don't sign.
I am lost if I do. How can I ever prove my innocence?
Sir William, we are dealing with you as leniently as possible.
Leniently? You speak as if I were a criminal. I tell you I am innocent. Signing that paper, if I sign, is a confession. No, I am confessing nothing. There is nothing to confess. but the accusation alone damages me. It prevents me from associating with my friend.
No, 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 quite the opposite. You must understand, the document buries the incident forever. You will be able to see your friends just as before. That's the point of it.
Is that true? Nothing will change, particularly as far as you are concerned, sir.
We would all certainly do our best to forget.
Tell me that you, at any rate, give me the benefit of the doubt in the matter, sir. You and General Williams, whom I have known for 30 years.
We have given you that with the document.
But in your minds, I mean.
There's no doubt in my mind whatsoever.
I warn you.
No, leave him be. He is beyond contempt. He can say what he likes, think what he likes. His opinion is nothing to me. It is you, gentlemen, who mean everything. Your regard, your respect, are absolutely a matter of life and death.
But then sign, sir. It is we who commend it to you. We advise it. It's just a piece of paper. It will be forgotten in a few days. Everything will be forgotten.
This even debars me from shilling rubbers of whist in the mess.
Yes, it does. For the last time, sir. If you are too hard on him, you certainly will destroy us all.
In the last resort, Gordon Cumming, I urge you to consider the prince. His position is critical. You, and only you, can protect him.
You understand, sir, that if I sign, it will be entirely for your sake, to prevent your Royal Highness from being involved in a public row. That is strictly understood, is it not, sir?
Yes.
I am not confessing to guilt.
No, no.
I am merely undertaking not to play cards again.
Quite.
And total silence will be kept?
Absolutely.
And it is understood that, apart from not playing cards, my position in society is preserved?
Of course.
Very well.
We will all be absolutely silent.
We will never mention this to a soul.
I can assure you, Gordon Cumming, that your secret is absolutely safe in my hands. No one will ever know from me what an unspeakable bounder you are.
It was only a matter of weeks before the secret was out. For anyone to have expected otherwise was naive to the point of idiocy. But everything, literally everything, was wrong with the Tranby Croft plan. It's hard to believe that a group of presumably sensible people could have thought up such an idea. In the first place, the very fact that my father scrupulously kept his side of the bargain excited comment. Why should an enthusiastic, well-known gambler suddenly stop playing cards? Then to expect 7 people to keep a secret was asking too much of human nature. Soon all London was gossiping about it. The Lycett Greens were doing rather more.
Ethel? Ethel, where are you?
Ah, there you are. I've had a letter from General Williams.
Oh, yes?
About that scoundrel Gordon Cumming.
Oh?
It seems the secret is out. Gordon Cumming has been getting anonymous letters.
Really?
You don't sound very interested in my news.
I'm not.
Well, perhaps this will intrigue you. Apparently, Gordon Cumming has been seen with a mysterious young woman in the most unlikely places. Kew Gardens, Victoria Station, even Westminster Abbey. The latter I consider a most unsuitable place for an assignation, don't you? Was it his suggestion or yours?
I guessed we were being followed. Your detective was rather clumsy. He would keep wearing the same shabby overcoat. Well, once I'd noticed it, I could hardly fail to recognize him wherever I went. Is he outside now? Perhaps we should spare him the trouble and give him a list of where I'm going. Or perhaps you would like to come with me and meet William. Well, that would spare you the trouble of writing to him again.
Oh, you think I wrote the anonymous letters?
Didn't you?
No.
You're not even as good a liar as William. William lies as he does everything, with practiced skill.
Including cheating?
He didn't cheat. I'm quite sure of that. I'm also quite certain you wrote the letters.
I have got Sir William where I want him, and I am not going to let him go. I was tempted to confront him long before Tranby Croft, but I decided to wait. He would have enjoyed it too much. Scene with young husband, wife ruined, part of the fun. The club's buzzing with more tales of his sexual prowess. So I bided my time, and then the stupid fool cheated and played right into my hands. I've got him where it hurts most. His honour.
The clubs won't be talking about his sexual triumphs anymore, only about his squalid practices at the card table. Tell me, what do you talk about when you whisper together in Westminster Abbey? Does he tell you of the shame he's suffering?
No.
Ah, he keeps that to himself, does he? I suppose he thrills you with tales of how he goes big game hunting and then pops into the mess to rob his fellow officers. Does he give you a list of the society whores he sleeps with?
That's why you hate him, isn't it? Not because he's a cheat, but because he's a man and you aren't. Or perhaps you think hunting a pathetic little fox makes you one, He hunts tigers alone on foot. And your attitude to women is as cowardly and pathetic as his is brave and triumphant. Do you know, I actually married you for love. Yes, I did. I thought our first night would be the fulfillment of every possible delight. But I suffered agonies of pain and distress, and you were totally unaware of anything. You were too interested in your own horrible satisfaction.
I will not listen.
Oh, yes, you will. You thought you could have me followed and intimidate me. But I'm not the little mouse you married. Far from it. These past months have turned me into a tigress, and I am learning to fight
you
back.
You are too smart.
Our children were conceived in misery and pain and eventually hatred. Because I have come to hate you. I smile and pretend and tell my parents how happy I am, and no one suspects anything. But I simply loathe you. Until that night in Blenheim, I thought all men were as clumsy and as inconsiderate as you. But William was a revelation. He is gentle and tender. All the young wives do sleep with him, and I will tell you why. Because he is a better lover than all the young husbands put together.
What are your plans for today?
I'm lunching with Lady Carter, then having tea with Mother. We are going out to dinner with the Coventrys in the evening.
Oh, yes, of course. The Prince will be there. Should be fun.
Yes.
I should like you to wear the new diamonds I gave you.
Of course.
Will you be seeing Gordon coming today?
No.
But soon, perhaps?
I don't know.
It would be wise not to see him at all. I gather from this letter that he's probably going to sue us all for slander.
I doubt if I shall see him again. As you have reminded me so charmingly, I am one amongst many. But if he were to ask me, I would run away with him forever.
I don't wish to seem intrusive, but might you do that?
No, because you see, whilst I love him with all my heart and soul, he doesn't love me.
No. No, of course not. You do realize that on the evidence I have, I could easily divorce you, but as I hope to go into politics, that is out of the question.
Yes, I know.
Nor do I think our children should be made to suffer the stigma of divorced parents.
Quite so.
Those are your views, are they not? That is why you are staying with me.
Yes.
I have no wish to force myself upon you, so we shall have separate bedrooms from now on.
Thank you.
In public, particularly in front of our families, we shall continue to behave as a happy married couple.
Yes.
Should the bounder sue us, you will continue to support our case. You will continue to state that you saw him cheating, as he did. And you will not so much as hint, either in or out of court, at your improper relationship with him. Should you do so, we shall not only lose the case, which I realize does not worry you, but I shall at once start proceedings for a divorce, and you will never see your children again as long as you live.
I understand.
Your father wasted a great deal of money on you with French governesses and a finishing school in Switzerland. But no amount of polish will ever disguise the fact that, at heart, you are a common Yorkshire slut. We shall meet in the hall at 6, dressed.
In my diamonds.
And dressed in her diamond, she went, conscious of the fact that no one was discussing her jewels, however magnificent, but her role in the Tranby Croft affair. Although society was seething with rumour, everyone tried to carry on as if nothing had happened. All except the Prince, that is. His conduct was inexplicable. In all his career, he had never behaved with less generosity or less common sense. He didn't seem to understand that his attitude to my father was the crux of the plan. Everything depended on him behaving exactly as if nothing had happened.
For 20 years I have been invited to Lord Mar's annual shooting party for the Prince. This year I am not, and I have no doubt why. The Prince has struck my name off the guest list.
You have no proof of that.
I signed that monstrous document on the strict understanding that my position in society would be unchanged. But old friends of mine walk away when I enter a room. And now the Prince has dropped me. He ignores all my letters.
He is a busy man.
Too busy to answer this. The last appeal of an old friend. The forfeiture of your esteem is, believe me, sir, the cruelest blow of all. The only hope I have of remaining an untarnished English gentleman in the eyes of the world is for the world to see no alteration in your love to me. It totally remains in your power, utterly to damn morally and physically, one who had ever been a loyal and devoted subject to your Royal Highness. I wrote that 2 weeks ago. I've not heard a word from him.
I see.
I want justice. It is only a matter of time now before the story is in the press. I shall have to take legal advice to protect my good name unless the Prince can be persuaded to change his attitude. We are on the verge of a calamity. Will you speak to him for me?
My dear fellow, of course I will. You've kept your bargain. We must keep ours.
But the Prince was obdurate. He had ruthlessly cut him out of his life. My father faced ostracism, the very thing he feared most. And so the long period of suspense was over. 6 months of hoping against hope that the affair would be forgotten. My father made his decision.
I had no alternative. I had done everything I could to protect the Prince. Now I had to protect myself. I was innocent, so I fought.
Knowing none of the risks?
Well, of course, I realized that a court case is never a pleasant experience. But nothing my solicitors warned me about prepared me for the hell of it. Once it was known that the Prince would have to go into the witness box, the press had a field day. I remember it all as if it were yesterday. The newspapers scented blood. Every day there were fresh attacks on me and on the Prince. They searched for sexual overtones. They described baccarat as if it were a new and terrible vice. And in that atmosphere of mounting hysteria, I couldn't find a barrister with courage enough even to see me, let alone take my case. Until finally, Sir Edward Clarke called me to his chambers.
Ah, Sir William, good of you to come. Let me get straight to the point. I have read the statement sent to me by your solicitor, and it seems to me that you are plainly innocent. If so, then I have no doubt we will win. Justice must prevail.
Thank you.
But there is something very important you must understand. Whilst you are the plaintiff, that is, you are bringing the case and suing your opponents for slander, it is my experience in such cases that you will end up, at any rate in the eyes of the world, as the defendant.
Why?
Because they are pleading justification, and that means they are in fact accusing you of what they claim you did.
In other words, I have to prove my innocence, whilst my accusers do not have to prove my guilt.
Quite. What's more, they are accusing you of a crime. Cheating at cards for money is fraud, which is theft. If they had reported you to a policeman and he had arrested you for stealing, you would have been charged in a police court and this would have been a criminal case. But unfortunately, it is not. It is a civil case where you have far less protection. You can be attacked and cross-examined at will. Your accusers can be as vague as they like and use suggestion and innuendo. I could prevent this were I defending you in a criminal court, but I am powerless to do so in a civil court. Win or lose, you may still be damaged. And that is why I think it essential to try and settle out of court.
Will that be possible?
Your opponents seem strangely obdurate. Every overture is rebuffed. I have conceded point after point. I have not even asked for an apology, merely an admission of error. They remain adamant. Why?
I don't know.
This is going to be a long, hard, expensive business. In order to win, I have to know everything. The whole background, and the complete truth.
I told you the truth.
A barrister cannot work miracles. Like a soldier, he can only fight successfully if he is provided with ammunition and if he knows the terrain. Now, sir, think carefully. Is there any reason for any of your opponents to hate you?
Why should they? I barely know any of them.
Someone must. Perhaps there'd been some trouble over gambling in the past?
How do you mean?
You like to win, don't you?
Who doesn't?
Is it essential to you?
My father brought me up to it.
Sir William, have you ever cheated in your life?
Never.
That is the answer I expected. I'm sorry to have to ask you such questions, but you would be surprised how often clients lie to their own counsel. They lie about anything they think embarrassing. A youthful escapade, best forgotten, a romantic entanglement that they don't want the world to know about. It's very stupid of them, because what it means is that they send their counsel into court with one arm tied behind his back. But I'm sure you are too old a soldier to do anything so stupid.
You didn't tell him about Mrs. Lysa Green?
How could I? Her husband may have been doing his level best to destroy me. I could not defend myself by destroying his wife.
I began remembering long-forgotten events. Once you had a run of bad luck at the casino and got into a terrible rage.
Hmm?
I remember my surprise, as you hadn't lost much money. And Mother explained that money had nothing to do with it. You were constitutionally incapable of being a loser. And there was another time, a shoot at Gordonston. Alec claimed he had a bigger bag than yours. You said no, you'd shot more than he had, and you showed him your game book. Your score was higher than his. Had you altered it?
I'm sorry, my dear. You were saying?
Never mind.
I was remembering the first day of the trial. The huge queues outside the court waiting to get in.
I wondered why he hadn't answered me. Was he unable to admit even now that because of his need to win, he had done exactly what he was accused of, so pretended not to hear me? But if so, why should such a rich man cheat, especially with the prince there? Had he been deliberately courting the danger of disgrace for the thrill of it? I looked at him, and I could see he was no longer aware of me. He was back in that courtroom.
One had to push one's way through the crowd to get in. Inside, the place was packed. It was suffocating in that hot weather. The judge's wife and half of society were in the public gallery, dressed up in their best clothes. It was like a theater rather than a courtroom. Some of the audience had even brought opera glasses. There was great excitement as my five accusers arrived together. When I caught sight of them, I was pursued with violent anger. The counsel arrived in their wigs and gowns, Sir Edward first, and then Sir Charles Russell. Sir Charles was to be my accuser and my scourge, renowned for his merciless cross-examination. I was soon to discover how well he had earned his reputation. But the greatest sensation of all was the arrival of the Prince of Wales.
I shall never forgive Gordon Cumming for this. You realize he is not the only one on trial. I am, too. I'm lampooned in the papers, censured by the people, and the Queen writes me furious letters. Why the bounder didn't just go abroad, I'll never know. If he wins, I shall be the laughing stock of the country.
He won't win, sir.
I'm not so sure. You can never tell in slander cases.
I tried to catch his eye, but he never so much as glanced at me. I had embarrassed him, and so, quite simply, I have ceased to exist. So it began. I remember every moment of it, my feelings. But it is disjointed in my mind. Like a nightmare, it goes round and round with people, barristers, everyone coming out of the dark to attack me. The struggle to keep control was so intense that sometimes I literally couldn't hear what was going on. And when I came to, it was to discover Sir Charles standing over me, shouting questions. Sometimes even now I wake at night, trembling at the ordeal. Can you understand that?
Of course I can, Father.
And yet it was 30 years ago.
But to you it was yesterday. It will always be yesterday.
Gentlemen of the jury, I am here to defend that soldier's honor. The issues are heavy ones for him. If the accusation be upheld against him, there ends in this court that career of honor and of public service which his 1,000 friends hoped would be continued for many splendid years to come. He must go away, degraded from the profession to which he belongs, exiled from the companionship of those he has known as friends, and in another land, and perhaps under another name, seek some career which may dim but cannot efface the memory of these transactions. I hope for a very different result from that. I hope that Sir William Gordon Cumming, in his hour of peril here, may find protection in your instincts of justice. Sir William, when did you first learn of the shocking charges that were being made against you?
On the evening of the 10th.
What was your response?
I emphatically and indignantly denied the suggestion that I had cheated.
But you later signed an undertaking never to play again.
Yes.
Oh, I've never ceased to regret that I did so.
Why did you sign it?
Because extreme pressure was brought to bear on me.
What sort of pressure?
I was told again and again that there would be a terrible scandal if I did not.
You were threatened with a scandal?
Yes, persistently threatened.
Sir William, you are a soldier and used to danger. This scandal must have been very frightening. What was so horrible about it?
It was horrible because the name of the Prince of Wales would be attached to it.
How?
It would not be desirable for the Prince to be involved with a game of baccarat.
No, why not?
It's illegal.
And that is what would cause the scandal?
Yes.
Nothing else?
It would not be desirable that the name of the Prince should be associated with a game of baccarat with an officer who had been accused of cheating.
But you say you were not cheating, so where does the scandal come in?
I've answered that already.
You've done no such thing.
I was an officer in the Guards. It was awkward for a man in my position.
Merely to be playing a game of baccarat? Why should the threat of such a trivial scandal loom so large in the mind of an innocent man? It would loom large in the mind of a guilty man because then he would be frightened of a worse scandal, that of being caught red-handed cheating at cards. Is that the scandal that frightened you, Sir William?
No, it is not.
Then why did you sign that paper?
I was pressed to do so by the Prince and General Williams.
Did it occur to you that they advised you to sign in the belief that you were guilty?
No, certainly not.
Sir William, are you aware that the General made a detailed record of these events soon after they occurred, while they were fresh in his mind?
No, I was not aware of that.
A record that was read and even signed by the Prince of Wales as an accurate account in all respects.
I knew nothing of it.
Then I must point out to you that it contains the following passage. General Williams explained to Sir William Gordon Cumming that the only possible condition on which silence could be maintained would be that he should sign the undertaking. At the same time, he clearly pointed out that his signature would be a distinct admission of guilt. Quite understanding, he signed the document.
I take the strongest exception to that. It is utterly untrue. It was I, in objecting to signing, who said it would be tantamount to confession. They brushed me aside. They assured me that it wasn't. To suggest otherwise is a gross distortion of the facts.
Sir William, did you cheat at baccarat that night?
I did not.
Is there any truth whatsoever in the accusation against you?
There is none whatsoever.
Sir William, when did you finally realize that the Prince and General Williams believed you guilty?
When I received a letter from them shortly afterwards.
The letter which said, in the face of the overwhelming evidence against you, it is useless to deny the accusations.
Yes.
Why did you not retract your undertaking at once?
I thought that was impossible, having signed it.
You made no attempt to withdraw it?
No.
How long ago did you receive that letter from the Prince and the General?
9 months ago.
3 days after the events at Tranby Croft?
Yes.
And then you at last understood that you had no longer retained the respect of these men whose friendship you valued.
If I had been guilty of the offense, yes.
But you believed that they thought you guilty?
I could no longer doubt it.
Then why did you not at once attempt to vindicate yourself?
Because they had told me it was useless to try and deny the allegations.
But you are denying them now, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Then why did you wait 9 months to do so? What has altered the position?
On reflection, I saw the mistake I had made.
What mistake?
Of signing the paper, Sir Charles. But having been given an undertaking that it would not come out, I lived for some time in a fool's paradise, hoping and believing that that would be the case.
Sir, although in the eyes of these once valued and esteemed friends, you were a dishonored man, you were content to remain so if secrecy were preserved.
It does not follow that I was guilty just because they thought so. I knew perfectly well I was not.
Pray attend to my question.
I have answered your question.
I assure you, you have not. Although you knew that in the eyes of these gentlemen you were a dishonored man, you were content to remain so.
I was not content to remain so.
Please attend, you did remain so, did you not? So what is altered the position?
I have no alternative.
Answer the question.
I have answered the question.
You have not, Sir William. What has since taken place which has altered the position?
Are you asking me my reasons for taking these proceedings?
You have told me that when you received that letter, you then became aware that you were regarded, rightly or wrongly, by these esteemed friends as a man with a blasted reputation. And you have said, in effect, that you were content not to take proceedings.
Those were not the words of the plaintiff. He said he was not content.
In effect.
Not at all. When my learned friend says in effect, he means the very opposite.
I have not had a moment's contentment since I signed that paper.
We are not concerned with your contentment, Sir William. We are concerned with the altered condition. Something caused you to change your mind, did it not?
Well, of course it did.
What was it?
The silence had been broken. The secret was all over town. The thing had become such public property that I feared it might be taken up by my clubs, by my regiment, and by all my friends.
That is your answer. And that is the answer I expected you to have given long ago.
I felt certain I had lost. I was in despair. My friends had lied and betrayed me, and I could not understand why. What had I done to them?
They were fighting to save their own skins. The general to preserve his position. The prince to protect his future crown.
General Williams, you heard the account of your record of events read out in court?
Yes.
Is it accurate?
Yes.
Sir William says it is not.
He is wrong. He said it was tantamount to being a confession of guilt, and I agreed with him.
And you say you told him so?
I did.
You believed him to be a cheat?
Yes.
Did you tell him that too?
In a manner of speaking?
Yes or no?
It was obvious.
You wrote two accounts. The first purported to be a diary of events in which you said he was obviously confessing his guilt. The second was a letter to Sir William. What did you say in that?
I wrote to him as he requested.
What did you write to him?
I don't remember exactly. I think I said that he had not acknowledged his guilt.
And what else did you say?
I said, I think, that he had signed under extreme pressure.
So, this letter completely contradicts your earlier account, doesn't it?
Yes.
When you were told that Sir William had cheated, what did you do?
I don't remember exactly. I was much upset.
You suggested hushing it all up, did you not?
The suggestion was made.
By whom?
I don't remember.
The prince had not yet been told. Mr. Lycett Green was eager to expose Sir William, so who could have suggested hushing it up if it wasn't you?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I suppose it must have been me.
Ah, thank you, General. Now, you have told us that you believed Sir William was guilty. On what evidence did you form that opinion?
On what I've been told.
You yourself had seen something?
No, but there were five people who had.
Did you interview them all?
No.
Before you informed the prince, did you give Sir William a chance to explain himself?
No.
You just made up your mind he was guilty?
Yes.
Now, tell me, when you were all discussing the document for Sir William to sign, had he seen it?
No.
Had it been as much as mentioned to him?
No, it hadn't.
So there you were, a friend of the plaintiff's of 30 years standing. You had served together in the army, you had faced danger with him. Yet you could actually draw up a document, which you now say was an admission of guilt, without so much as mentioning it to the plaintiff.
I thought it was the only way out of his difficulty.
Hope was returning. Sir Edward was breathing new life into my case.
General, can you give us any indication of Sir William's state of mind from the letter he wrote to you on the 29th of January after the story got out?
He said that unless the reports were stopped or contradicted, there was nothing left for him but to vanish forever or to cut his throat.
You're certain that's what he wrote?
Certain.
Sir William, on the night of September the 10th, the general informed you that people had seen you cheating. Precisely what were you accused of doing?
I never knew the exact nature of the charge.
Presumably you were.
I imagine so.
Imagine so?
Well, I must have done.
Did Sir William ask you, General?
No, he did not.
I must have been too upset by the accusation. I don't remember.
Do you remember making any inquiries at all about this very grave accusation that had been made against you?
Yes, certainly. I asked who they were. He kept repeating that five persons made the charge.
Did you ask to be confronted with them?
No.
You did not wish to meet them face to face and demand to know what they claimed you did?
I don't think it occurred to me.
It didn't occur to you?
Not at the time. I had lost my head, Sir Charles, on that occasion. If I had not lost my head, I would not have signed that document.
I am not discussing the document now. I am at an earlier stage. Were you not told that Mr. Lycett Green objected to signing the paper and wished to have it out and be confronted with you? Were you told that?
No.
Sir William Gordon Cummings, do you pledge your oath on that point?
I have no recollection of it.
Is that all you have to say?
I have no recollection. But I may go further, Sir Charles, and say emphatically that no such suggestion was made.
General, did Mr. Lysett Green desire to be confronted with Sir William Gordon Cumming?
He did.
Did you inform Sir William?
I did.
Are you sure of that?
Quite sure.
Sir William, did you ask to be confronted with Mr. Lysett Green?
No.
You knew that Mr. Bartley Levitt, your own brother officer, was one of the accusers.
Yes.
Did you ask to be confronted with him?
I asked to be confronted with nobody.
Why not?
I cannot tell. I had a most horrible charge made against me, and I virtually lost my head on that occasion.
You are a soldier of high rank, with a gallant record in battle, and great experience against all kinds of adversity.
Yes.
But you think you lost your head?
I consider I did.
A gentleman, here was a man held to be of honor facing a horrible charge. What did he do? He said he was innocent. A guilty man would say that. An innocent man would say that too, but he would say more. He would ask, where are my accusers? What do they say I have done? When and how do they say I did it? Bring them face to face with me. There is a terrible mistake which I can dispel. Not Sir William. Instead, he enters into the degrading undertaking that he will never, as long as he lives, play cards again in exchange for their secrecy. Is it conceivable that an innocent man would consent to bear such an odious burden?
Gentlemen, if he had been a common cheat, he would never have signed a document like that. A guilty man would have faced it out to the end. His signature is no sort of evidence that he admitted himself to be guilty of this offense.
But it is every sort of evidence that he did not have the manhood to assert his innocence. The manhood would have been there if the innocence had been there.
It is Sir William Gordon Cumming's bitterest pain today that he has been told over and over again in words that must have wrung his heart that he is condemned already because he signed a paper that he was urged to put his name to by the two people he thought he could trust most.
Precisely, sir. The very people whose respect he particularly valued. Yet he was content to be regarded by them as a detected cheat. He was content to live under this awful stigma so long as it was kept secret. And when the secret is out, then, and then only, does he resort to this action. Because no other remedy is open to him. Gentlemen, could any conduct have been more calculated to build up, sustain, and support the evidence of these five unprejudiced persons, which you will now hear, from the conduct of Sir William Gordon Cumming? My lord, to assist the court, I propose to introduce a representation of the baccarat table, if your lordship pleases. Gentlemen, this is not intended to be an exact model. It is simply a device to demonstrate to the court with the greatest possible clarity the manipulation of the stakes. I call Mr. Stanley Wilson. Will you step up to the table, please? I ask you to examine the cloth. Does it resemble the one used at Tranby Croft on the second night of the game?
It does.
Would you please draw a chalk line the same distance from the edge of Sir William's side of the table as it was on that night? Now, would you show the court a £5 counter? Please place it in the position where you saw Sir William place his stick. How would you describe that?
About 6 inches over the line.
Towards the center of the table?
Yes.
That constitutes a stake or bet of £5 because it is over the line?
It does.
Clear for all to see.
Precise.
Now, will you tell me exactly what you saw the plaintiff do?
Well, as usual, only two people, apart from the banker, were actually handling the cards, one on either side of the bank. The rest were betting on the cards dealt to the player on their side. In this case, Sir William was betting on Mr. Levitt's cards. I noticed that Sir William was sitting with his hands together in front of him beside his stake.
What happened next?
The banker dealt. Mr. Levitt picked up his cards and Sir William leant over to see what he'd got. At that moment, I saw that he had something red in the palms of his hands. And I immediately knew that this could be nothing less than another £5 counter. Mr. Levitt had a natural, a winning nine. Immediately Sir William saw this, he opened his hand and dropped the counter beside his original stake. Like this. I turned away for a moment, and when I looked back, I saw he had a third counter over the line, thus trebling his bet.
And trebling his winnings.
Undoubtedly.
He had been well rehearsed by his solicitor and counsel. Would he be so cocksure under cross-examination?
Why did you not say at once
Sir William Gordon coming, you only staked £5.
There were ladies at the table.
But you'd already told two ladies about such a thing the night before.
There were other ladies present. It's not a natural thing to have a row over cards in front of ladies.
You thought of nothing except the ladies?
I told you, I didn't think it the right thing to do.
Not to call attention to Sir William's actions at once?
No, certainly not. When at the table to have a scene.
Have you had so many scenes over card tables that you know what should be done?
Well, no, I have not.
No, indeed. In fact, you were virtually a novice at the game, weren't you?
Possibly. But I've heard a great deal about it since.
If you did not think it right to make a scene, did you think it right to go on playing and letting your friends play with a man you suspected of fraud?
Well, I was much upset.
But not so upset that you stopped staking your money on cards Sir William was backing. You did do that, didn't you?
Yes.
Yet you thought him a cheat. Tell me, sir, what does that make you?
With mounting confidence, I watched the witnesses as one by one they walked into a trap of their own making, like Mrs. Wilson.
Oh, I've no doubt at all. Sir William definitely cheated. I saw him looking at the cards, and when they were favourable, I saw him push a £5 counter with his finger straight before him so openly that I wondered others did not see it too.
Show us, please.
What? Oh, now, which are the £5 ones? Oh, here we are. That's how he did it, you see. He pushed it over the line like that. I am perfectly sure that before the natural was declared, his bet was only £5. And a moment later, I saw another one there. He was paid £15. Oh, it came as a great shock to me, of course. I hadn't noticed anything of Sir William's play until I was passed a note from my son-in-law about it. I had completely put it out of my mind.
I could hardly wait for the cross-examination.
Mrs. Wilson.
Yes.
How long had you been playing before you received the note from your son-in-law?
About an hour and a half.
And up to that time you had put it out of your mind?
Completely.
You had been told of the alleged cheating the night before. You had discussed the matter at length. You had agreed to watch to see if he did it again. Your son reminded you about it before you went into the card room, and you seriously say that you sat down and played with Sir William for an hour and a half without the matter entering your mind.
I felt almost sorry for Mrs. Wilson. She stared at Sir Edward in terror, like a rabbit gazing at a cobra.
I would like an answer.
Well, I was the hostess, you see.
Well?
Well, I had plenty to think about.
Such as?
The dinner, the drinks. Oh, it was the first time the prince had stayed with us, you see. And it was all going wrong. I mean, my house party might have been destroyed. And then there was my daughter to think of.
Why your daughter?
A young married woman, you see. I mean, it would be dreadful if she was mixed up in some sort of scandal.
I suddenly wondered whether she suspected us. Was she terrified that her daughter's sex life would be exposed?
I mean to say, if it ever came out, Ethel would be mixed up in it all.
Mixed up in what?
A scandal.
I could hardly breathe. I was sure the silly woman was going to blurt out the truth about Ethel and me.
Oh, it goes on everywhere. Longleat, Castle Howard, Chatsworth.
What goes on everywhere?
Gambling, flinging money away on horses and cards. Oh, I should never have allowed it. And she, Ethel, my daughter, was at this card table. Oh, she's even a witness at this very trial. It's all too dreadful to think of.
It was clearly impossible to get any sense out of her, but she had done what Sir Edward wanted. She had given herself away as a useless and unreliable witness. The trial was swinging in my favor, and my hopes were rising.
Tell us about the piece of paper, Lieutenant Levitt.
I beg your pardon?
On the first night of the game, Sir William asked for a piece of paper like this, didn't he?
Yes, I think so.
Would you show us where he placed it?
Somewhere there.
And where did he place his stakes? On or off the paper?
On it, I think.
Show us, please. Three counters. Was that his original stake?
I don't remember.
You don't remember?
No, but I definitely saw his hand moving, and I'm sure there were three counters there when the bank paid out.
The red stands out very well on the paper, doesn't it?
I don't understand.
I'm sure you don't. You don't understand very much, do you?
Well...
Nor do you remember very much.
After 9 months, one is liable to forget a few of the facts.
Yes, of course. So, you agree you have forgotten some of the details.
Well...
Let's see how much you do remember. Were you smoking?
I should think so. I don't know.
Were there ashtrays on the table?
I can't remember. There may have been.
Was anything else on the table? Glasses?
I dare say if anyone was drinking. I don't know.
You didn't notice anyone drinking or smoking. You didn't see ashtrays or glasses. But you did notice Sir William's hand moving.
Oh, yes. In a suspicious way, too.
What was your reaction when Stanley Wilson first told you there was something wrong?
I was appalled.
Did you believe it?
No, not at first. I couldn't.
Yet you can't remember how much Sir William originally said.
I can't say. Not possibly.
You simply made up your mind Sir William was behaving dishonestly.
I had been told he was cheating. You see, that's what I'd been told.
So you believed it?
Yes, what else was I to do?
You never thought there might be a perfectly innocent explanation for his actions. And of course you didn't think to ask. You just went along with the crowd, didn't you? Believing what you'd been told to believe and seeing what you'd been told to see.
Three down, two to go. But I didn't reckon with Ethel and her damnable husband. Suddenly everything began to change again.
I shall need a pencil, please.
A pencil?
What I saw Sir William do involved a pencil.
Like this?
Yes, that will do.
Now, you had already seen him stake a red £10 counter, had you not?
No, the £10 counters are brown.
Forgive me.
Of course, it is rather complicated.
He had staked £5.
Yes.
Would you kindly demonstrate to the court?
Certainly. He had a red counter here, 4 inches beyond the line.
Was your side of the table successful or not?
Oh, yes, we were successful.
Did you hear the banker make any declaration?
No, but I knew we had won. I heard Sir William say so.
Will you show us what Sir William did then?
Certainly. He had placed a second red counter very near the chalk line on his side, almost touching it. He held the pencil in his right hand. He picked up a sheet of paper with his left. Then he laid the paper over his right hand, so. When no one was looking, he carefully pushed the second counter over the line with the tip of his pencil, like this. My attention was distracted for a moment, and when I turned back, there was a third red counter over the line. His legitimate stake was £5. The banker paid him 15.
At once, defeat stared me in the face. Where the others had been confused and contradictory, she had been calm and lethally precise.
Mr. Lysett Green, you have no doubt that the counters were pushed over the line after the cards were seen to be favorable.
I have no doubt of it. Sir William said, there's another tenor to come here, sir. And the prince said, I wish you'd put your counters so that they can be seen. Give him another tenor, General.
When you saw this, what did you do?
My first impulse was to jump up and expose him. But on second thoughts, I felt it would be wrong to make a scene in the presence of His Royal Highness. So I got up from the table, went into the next room, and wrote a note to Mrs. Wilson.
This note was written on Cranbycroft notepaper, dated September the 10th, 1890, 11:15 p.m., and signed by yourself.
It was.
And who has had safekeeping of it since?
Mrs. Wilson gave it to General Williams that same evening.
Is this the note?
It is.
Read it to the court, please.
It is perfectly horrible. I have distinctly seen Sir William Gordon coming cheating twice.
That was written while the game was actually in progress. You walked straight out of the room and wrote it.
I did.
When the impression could not have been clearer in your mind.
Precisely. I wanted to record it there and then so that no one could say later that I was confused or had imagined it. I sent the butler to deliver it to my mother-in-law at once.
And now, 9 months later, you are still certain that this is a true record of what you saw.
I am. Quite certain.
So, gentlemen, we have 5 persons swearing unmistakably that they saw Sir William cheat and telling you how they saw him cheat. We have 2 others, the Prince of Wales and General Owen Williams, who heard the accusations against him and who arrived at the conclusion that he was guilty. We have, therefore, 7 out of 8 characters in the story who have come to this clear conclusion of guilt. That is why the 8th, Sir William himself, signed the document which he was told would be regarded as an admission of guilt, and that is why General Williams advised him to do so.
The reason he was advised to sign was to protect the reputation of the Prince of Wales.
Oh, no, that won't do.
Royalty wields a strong and subtle influence. A personal influence. History is full of deeds done by noblemen who gave their honor as freely as they would have given their lives to save the interests of a dynasty or to conceal the foibles of a prince. This is what was in the mind of General Williams. He thought he was being of good service to the prince if he took a course of action which would allow the whole matter to pass into oblivion. If he is to be excused for persuading his old comrade to sign this document because of his devotion to the prince, should not Gordon Cumming be given that credit too? Was there no loyalty to the prince in the man who sacrificed himself, as his friends were willing to sacrifice him, in order to save the prince's name?
No, sir, that will not do. I believe the prince's name will survive the misfortune of being in the same room with a cheat.
You leave me with no option but to call His Royal Highness the Prince of Wales. Oh. Your Royal Highness has known Sir William for 20 years.
I have.
Am I right in saying that for 10 years at least he has enjoyed Your Royal Highness's favor?
Certainly.
He has been a guest in your house?
On several occasions.
And that friendship, that intimacy, remained unimpaired until September the 10th last year?
It did.
At cards on the evening of the 9th, sir, had anything occurred to give you the smallest suspicion as to Sir William's play?
Nothing whatsoever.
Would the same apply to the game on the evening of the 10th?
It would.
As banker, on those two occasions, you saw nothing of the alleged malpractices of the plaintiff?
No. It is unusual for a banker to see anything in dealing cards. You do not for a moment suspect anything of the sort.
It was not until after the second game that any communication was made to you in regard to the alleged bad play.
No.
On what was the allegation based?
The statement of 5 individuals.
When you gave Sir William the honor of an interview, did he deny the charge emphatically?
He did.
Thank you, sir.
I was profoundly uneasy. I could not put my finger on what was wrong. As Sir Charles cross-examined him, my sense of unease mounted.
The paper which Sir William signed, was it your idea, sir?
No.
Whose idea was it?
General Williams, I think.
Did the general ask you if he believed the accuser's story?
I never remember his asking any question of the kind.
You were greatly distressed by the occurrence.
I was.
Did you desire to act leniently towards Sir William?
Most certainly. I was motivated by concern for Sir William's welfare. And I believe that his undertaking not to play cards and our promise of silence would, in fact, save him.
But you haven't met Sir William since?
No, I haven't.
Had you intimated that you can never meet him again?
I cannot.
I'm afraid I didn't hear, Your Highness.
I cannot.
Finally, what was Your Royal Highness's opinion at the time of the charge against Sir William?
What am I to say? They seem so strongly supported, unanimously so, by those who brought them forward, that I felt no other course was open to me but to believe what I was told.
I was certain now I had lost.
Why?
He should have re-examined. Every scrap of the prince's evidence was hearsay. Why didn't Sir Edward challenge it? How could a jury be expected to do so if he didn't? He let the prince say he believed I was guilty without any foundation whatsoever. The prince had seen nothing. I wanted to jump up and yell at the jury. Don't believe him. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Just because he's a prince, there is no need to pay more heed to him than to anyone else. But I didn't move. Not a muscle. I just stared coldly and silently around the court. And then I realized that Lycett Green was giving evidence. And Sir Edward seemed to have something on his mind.
What is your occupation?
I am master of hounds.
At the time of the accusations against Sir William, did you think that qualified you to be the leading person in the matter?
I don't know that I was.
Then why did you dominate the whole proceedings?
I didn't. Not in my view.
You wanted to denounce Sir William.
You wanted your mother-in-law to denounce him. You were the spokesman to the general and then to the prince. You acted for the others in drafting the document. On every occasion, you are to be found furiously insisting on action. Why is that?
I had every right to be furious. The man's behavior was appalling. He had to be stopped, had to be punished.
Did you have any personal animosity towards Sir William?
None whatsoever.
So that was it. Sir Edward was probing for a personal motive. But did he realize where that road would lead him?
You had no reason at all to dislike Sir William.
Of course not.
No, of course not. Why should he?
Indeed, why should he? Can you tell us, Mrs. Green?
No. No, I can't.
My palms had begun to sweat. Had Sir Edward guessed our secret?
You saw nothing of the cheating on the first evening, did you?
No.
Then why did you at once believe the worst of Sir William?
I was told what the man had done.
My brother told me.
Her brother told me. Her brother wouldn't lie.
He could have been mistaken, and yet you leapt at once to the conclusion that Sir William was guilty. Why did you denounce him so passionately, so violently?
He didn't.
That is not true at all.
You're distorting it.
Not true. Did you not wish to challenge Sir William at the race course, to strike him across the face? You said that, didn't you? Both to the general and to the
prince. What if I did? He deserved to be challenged, to be assaulted.
Please.
His behavior was disgraceful, despicable.
No, please.
Utterly scandalous. Why, he even...
A glass of water for Mrs. Lysett Green.
The children. She was frightened of losing her children.
Are you all right, Mrs. Lysett Green?
Yes, perfectly. Thank you. I'm sorry. It must have been the heat.
The heat. Of course. Perhaps you'd like to sit down. My point, Mr. Green, is this. Could you not have given Sir William the benefit of the doubt?
We did. We watched him on the second night to make sure.
He had come to a dead end. But it had been a close shave. I breathed a sigh of relief.
When she is sufficiently recovered, I should like to recall Mrs. Lysett Green.
I knew then that I was not the only one in peril. If Ethel let slip one hint of our relationship, she faced catastrophe. You see, we had been meeting secretly until the trial.
Wasn't that terribly dangerous?
Oh, yes. In 1890, a divorced woman was an outcast. A whisper of our affair would have destroyed her. Would she be able to face Sir Edward out?
Do you dislike Sir William?
No.
You like him, do you?
Not especially.
You know him well?
Fairly well.
Fairly well. Surely you know him better than that.
No, casually.
You have often been a fellow guest with him at house parties.
Oh, yes.
Did you ever find anything unusual about his behavior?
Unusual?
You never observed him cheating, for example?
No.
At which house parties did you meet him?
Usually at his sister's, of whom I'm very fond.
Anywhere else?
Possibly.
Blenheim Palace, for instance?
That was a shock to both of us.
I've stayed there only once.
Who else knew about Blenheim Palace? Had someone seen us and talked?
Was Sir William a fellow guest?
Oh, there were a great many guests. The Duke of Marlborough is most hospitable.
She was thinking on her feet, playing for time, wondering as I was how much he knew.
I really can't recall if Sir William was there or not.
Isn't that rather odd?
I don't see why. It was a long time ago. I don't keep a diary.
I didn't dare move. She was skating on thin ice, but skating wonderfully bravely.
Have you played baccarat often?
No.
How many times, would you say?
Perhaps Blenheim was just a lucky hit, and Sir Edward had no idea of its significance.
Did you hear me, Mrs. Green? I asked you how many times you played baccarat.
About 6 or 7 times.
Who taught you?
Sir William Gordon Cumming.
Did you enjoy the lessons?
Yes.
Did he teach you any other games?
No.
No other amusements?
No.
She was clever enough to keep her answers simple.
When did he teach you?
I can't recall the date.
Where did he teach you?
At my house in York. He came to dinner and stayed overnight.
And you've only played 6 or 7 times since?
Yes.
So you don't really know much about the game?
I think I do.
How can you with so little experience?
Sir William is an expert teacher.
The court was deadly still. She had almost fallen through the ice, and Sir Edward knew it.
Ah, I see. Sir William is an expert teacher.
Yes.
And you are a novice.
I was.
But after his expert instruction, you were no longer a novice.
That is my opinion.
A fellow guest recalls you playing very badly at a certain house party.
I don't think I play badly.
It was at Blenheim Palace.
he said.
So he did know something. But as I had lied to him, he could only try to trick her into revealing our affair. He couldn't confront her with it.
Did you play badly at Blenheim?
I don't recall it.
He said you were flushed and excited during the game.
Oh?
Were you flushed and excited at Blenheim Palace?
I have no recollection of being excited there at all.
Or at Sandy Croft? Were you excited that Sir William was a fellow guest?
Not particularly.
What was your reaction when you were told he cheated?
I was upset, naturally.
But you agreed to watch him the next night?
Yes.
You didn't think to advise him not to play again?
No.
And you agreed to the setting of the trap?
I agreed to watch him with the others.
You didn't consider this a betrayal?
The conflict was almost too much for her. She knew Sir Edward was forcing her to betray me at that very moment. She could have saved me by giving in to him. But her own survival was at stake. I longed to go to her rescue. I wanted to shout at Sir Edward, leave her alone. I wanted to yell at the judge and the jury that we were lovers. I wanted to go to her and say, we'll both be outcasts together. Leave your husband and we'll fight for your children. But I forced myself to be silent. To the end of my days, I will wonder what would have happened if I had said what was in my heart. But for her sake, I was silent.
Mrs. Green, didn't you hear my question?
No. I did not consider it a betrayal of an old friend.
No further questions.
She'd come through the ordeal brilliantly. I've never admired her more.
You must have loved her very much.
Yes.
And she never knew?
No.
You never told her?
I couldn't. Not before, because I didn't know it myself. And not after, because it was too late. It was only then in the courtroom, as she desperately stuck her knife into me, that I knew I loved her. And knew I had lost her. And was convinced I'd lost my case. And then, I could hardly believe it. That bastard, Lycett Green, was really under attack at last.
You are speaking about a man cheating at cards. I want to learn what you know about it. Is it the practice to say what the stakes are?
I do not know.
You do not know enough of baccarat to say if the banker declares the stakes?
No.
Will you tell us how many people staked as much as £10, £15 or £20?
I cannot do so.
If the banker looked at any stake, would it be that of the person playing highest?
I do not know what he would do.
Do you recall Mr. Levitt's story of the three counters on the white sheet of paper?
No.
Was the idea conveyed to your mind that the stake had been trebled?
I have no recollection at all.
Have you any recollection of a specific act of cheating which had been alleged?
When I sat down the second time?
Yes.
I cannot say.
Did you not ask?
What he had done?
Yes.
I will not say I did not, but I have no recollection.
I suppose you thought it a very serious thing to charge a man with cheating?
I think so.
Having so little knowledge of the game yourself, would you not ask some questions?
As to the cheating?
As to what was alleged with regard to the play at the game of baccarat.
If you saw a man, as soon as he had seen his card, increase his stake, you must know that he is cheating.
Even if you are entirely ignorant of the game?
I should think so.
You agree that you are entirely ignorant of the game?
No, I do not agree.
You have just demonstrated your ignorance. Why do you think the court should give any weight to your opinion?
I cannot answer for the court.
Are you, in fact, able to form an opinion at all?
I have no doubt that there was cheating.
Very well. Mr. Lycett Green, have you ever heard of anybody playing baccarat upon a system?
A system?
A system called the coup de trois.
Not that I know.
Then perhaps Sir William can enlighten you. Sir William, like many expert players of baccarat, do you employ a system?
Yes, I do.
Will you tell the court what it is called?
The coup de trois.
Did you play that system at Tranby Croft?
I did.
Would you please explain it to the court?
Certainly. I stake one £5 counter. If I win, a £5 counter comes to me from the bank, and I add that to my original stake. Then I add a further £5 counter of my own, making three counters worth £15. That is my stake for the next coup.
And that is the system you were working, the coup de trois or game of three?
Indeed.
When you win, you leave your original stake down on the table and add to it what you have just won, and you also add a counter of the same value from your own pile.
Precisely.
Now, I want the jury to be quite clear about this. You would be seen, under this system, to add two identical counters to your original stake.
That is so.
Did you make these additions before or after the next coup had been declared?
Before, naturally.
To do so afterwards, when you knew you had won, would be cheating.
Most certainly.
But you did not do this.
No, I did not.
Now, Sir William, could you tell us in what circumstances your actions in following this perfectly legitimate method of play might have been misinterpreted as cheating?
If there were inexperienced players present who might not be familiar with the system.
And were such players present?
As it now appears, yes.
Now, on the second night, when you joined the game, were you aware that two of the players had noticed you adding counters the previous night and thought it irregular?
I was not.
Not a syllable had been said about it. No sign had been given that there was any kind of suspicion in their minds.
No.
And were you aware that no less than five persons were now watching to see if you did it again?
Absolutely not.
You used the same system.
I did. Throughout the evening.
Order! Order!
Gentlemen, that is the case for the plate. Sir William's perfectly legitimate system was mistaken by inexperienced players for cheating. No experienced player saw any irregularity whatsoever. And gentlemen, just let me draw your attention to this. Nobody other than Stanley Wilson saw any foul play except a person who was expecting to see it. And you will notice something else, for it is very remarkable. For a man intending to cheat, Sir William is quite extraordinary. He selects a red counter, the brightest of all. He puts it on a white piece of paper, the clearest of all. He draws attention to it by saying to the prince, "My stakes are on the white paper," and as you see for yourselves, it is about the most conspicuous combination that could possibly be invented. But then, everyone's behavior is extraordinary. Each of the witnesses has come before you and utterly destroyed their credibility. Take the master of the hounds, Mr. Dyset Green. He knows what ought to be done. He knows that if you find a man cheating, then and there, on the spot, at any cost, you should make an accusation or ever thereafter hold your peace about it. So he jumps up, full of valiant resolution, and he goes away and writes to his mother-in-law. It is ridiculous to talk of the evidence of people like this as grounds upon which a life is to be ruined and a reputation wrecked. I ask you in his name to clear him of the charge. It is not too late for you to prevent the final sacrifice of a gallant officer. The motto of his race is without fear. He came without fear into the witness box, for he had nothing to conceal. He sits without fear at this moment, for he believes, as I believe, that honesty is safe in the hands of a British jury.
I sat back, radiant, confident. It was all over by the shouting. We have unquestionably won.
But you lost.
Yes.
Why?
The prince and the judge. The jury could not believe that a man the Prince of Wales thought guilty could possibly be innocent. And the judge... The judge was an admirable advocate for the defendants. He examined my accusers one by one and found them perfect. Indeed, he seemed to find everyone perfect except me. He saw nothing peculiar, hasty or unwise in anything the defendants did. They were right to try to protect the prince, but I was not right to do the same. It was the most disgraceful and biased summing up in legal history. He all but instructed the jury to find against me. And so they filed out to discuss my case. An action which had lasted 5 whole days. Do you know how long it was before they came back? 13 minutes.
That is outrageous.
13 minutes to discuss the rules of baccarat, which probably none of them had even played. 13 minutes to debate every point made by both counsel. 13 minutes to weigh the evidence of the witnesses, to decide my fate and crucify me.
And what happened to you?
You know, don't you? I was condemned to a living death, confined to infinite freedom. I can go anywhere I like, but I can go nowhere. No one will receive me.
I do not think I have ever felt so sad. The prince and the judge may have been against him, and yes, the trial was unfair. But he'd lost for another reason altogether. For the first time in his life, he really cared for someone else. cared what happened to her. She betrayed him for her children's sake, and he let her do it. The one selfless act in his life ruined him. Did you ever see Mrs. Green again?
Once. Just after the war. I was in a taxi one evening in a traffic jam. A car, a Rolls Royce, drew level, and in the back was a beautiful woman. She was in evening dress, wearing diamonds. I'm sure it was her. She turned and stared at me. Neither of us gave any sign, just looked at each other. And I knew that her life had ended with mine. And then the traffic moved on, and that was all.
Why did you marry my mother?
For her money, and to have an heir.
Was that really all she meant to you?
Yes.
And then I understood something else. To him, women weren't really people. Except, perhaps, for Ethel Lycett Green, and he hadn't been man enough to declare his love. Not to her. Father's world, the only world he wanted, was with men. Masculine men who shot and hunted and fought in wars and gambled and chased women. For him, no one else but men, upper-class men, that is, existed.
You know, I had 1,000 acquaintances, and of that 1,000, I thought perhaps 20 were my friends. Not one of them ever spoke to me again. Not one.
Did you cheat, Father?
To be frank, my dear, I've forgotten.
In The Royal Baccarat Scandal by Royce Wrighton, based on the book by Michael Havers and Edward Grayson, Michael Jayston played Sir William. Robert Lang, the Prince of Wales, Judy Bowker, Mrs. Gibbs, Aidan Gillett, Lycett Green, Jane Arden, Ethel Lycett Green, Jonathan Adams, General Williams, Maura Kennedy, Mrs. Williams, Joe Kendall, Mrs. Wilson, Neil Roberts, Stanley Wilson, Matthew Sim, Mr. Levitt, Brett Usher, Sir Edward Clarke, and Peter Penry Jones, Sir Charles Russell. The play was directed by Matthew Walters.